So joining me today is author and poet Doug Valentine, the author of The Strength of the Pack, The Personalities, Politics, and Espionage Intrigues That Shape the DEA, and his new poetry also, which I recommend, With Our Eyes Wide Open, Poems of the New American Century. I like that title, taking off from PNAC a little bit there. But tonight's topic is the assassination of Martin Luther King. Was it really James Earl Ray? Or was there a conspiracy or a little bit of overlap? And this is a huge issue, so we have to take it piece by piece. And the focus for this segment will be on the 1999 trial, the King family versus Lloyd Jowers, in which the conclusion was, this was brought on by Dr. William Pepper, was a lawyer, but the conclusion was that government agencies killed Martin Luther King. So, Doug, I'll get your two cents on this issue. I know there's a lot of details, but let's try to at least start talking about it generally and boil it down.
Okay. Like you say, there's an awful lot of detail, a lot of witnesses, a lot of conflicting testimonies, and a lot of different interpretations of what happened. But in understanding the King versus Jowers trial, it's important to understand that the whole thing occurs in the context of institutionalized government sanctioned racism, and that all the evidence that is presented is viewed through that lens. And if you're making a case against the government, which is sanctioning the racism, it's a very uphill battle, because all the government agencies, from the White House to Congress, the FBI, the CIA, the military, and especially as in terms of government, the Memphis Police Department and society in Memphis was organized racially. And the whole assassination takes place in the context of a sanitation workers' strike. The sanitation workers in Memphis were 100% black. After 100 years since the Civil War and the end of slavery, blacks in Memphis, Tennessee had managed to go from working for nothing for their white rulers to being able to perform certain very low-paying jobs that no white person, respecting white person, would do. And so they were the sanitation workers, the garbage collectors in Memphis. And these were, by and large, the most successful blacks in Memphis. A large number of them were simply drug addicts working in even lower paying jobs and totally oppressed by the system. And Martin Luther King came to Memphis to lead a march by sanitation workers who were striking for better wages. They weren't striking for equality, because that was never gonna happen. And it's never gonna happen in America. They were just simply striking for a couple of extra bucks. And our government, federal government, considered Martin Luther King going to Memphis to organize this march on behalf of blacks to be the equivalent of terrorism and a threat to national security, because it would disrupt the whole balance of power in the United States if blacks could achieve some sort of equality and get good jobs. And for those of you alive today, including yourself, Roy, who are young people, you can't remember. You don't understand just how vicious the racism was in 1960s and 1968. And while things appear to be a little bit better today, the racism still exists and is as deeply institutionalized and as deeply sanctioned by the government. But some progress has been made. But in those days, the head of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, was a flaming racist, hated blacks. And he figured his whole purpose in life was to keep blacks down. And anything that he did, any crime he committed, and he committed thousands of crimes in the process of doing this, he considered that legitimate and to be patriotic Americanism.
He's on tape bragging about that.
That this happens in, okay? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was saying Hoover is on tape rationalizing his racism, and it wasn't even a secret. He openly was a racist and tried to say it was good for both races to keep them separate and blah, blah.
Well, yeah, and of course, that's a big lie, and it's not true, and it's oppression is what it is, and yet at the time,
there is moral issue. Moral issue comes from your heart in the first place. If I thought it was sinful and irreligious and immoral to separate myself social and education from Negro citizens, then I would commit a sin when I did so, I suppose. But I believe that separation is good for the Negro citizen and the white citizen.
In their best interest.
And in their best interest. And if I do something that my heart tells me is good for both groups, there's not anything that runs counter to any religion or any law of morality. It's not sinful.
This was the ideology and was openly expressed. Nowadays, in the 45 years, 46 years since the assassination, by and large, the language has changed, and the government and its officials at the federal and state and local levels have become much more sophisticated, and they avoid any of the outright expressions of racism that characterized J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Johnson and just wide swaths of America. And now they engage in a lot of double talk and that characterizes, for example, Fox News, which is always railing against black racism, you know, and it's really as vicious as it ever was. It's just more sophisticated in the language that's used, and it takes a lot of cleverness to be able to cut through it and to see what's really lurking underneath. But it's basically the same thing, and that is why today it's as difficult as ever to try to uncover what actually happened, because obfuscation and dissembling have been the powers of the government and the media to dissemble and obfuscate have become greater. And people just have a hard time trying to figure it out.
Our government openly subsidizes the Israeli racism for Palestinians and Africans in Israel. And all they really hide behind is they've changed the language around, but they almost have kind of code words, and you know what they're really meaning, what they're really trying to say.
Yeah. And yet, like Orwell said, if you repeat lies enough, they become the truth. And this is what the government relies on. I've made this point before on your show. It's psychological warfare directed against the American people. And most American people haven't got time to sit down and discuss these things the way we're discussing them. And they confer a lot of authority on the government and put a lot of faith and trust in it, as you can see, on like Memorial Day. And they honor it. And yet this trust and the conferring of authority are not well thought out because people are too busy you know, just struggling and trying to make a living. So it's easy for the government to pull off these kind of massive conspiracies, criminal conspiracies, and do so without any without people really examining it.
Now, in the trial, Dr. Peppers did make some mistakes, but he also made some good, valid points. And I think to crunch it down, the key things were that there was an army unit set up on the roof of the fire department that was overlooking the hotel balcony where he was shot. And then there was the incidents of the police, his bodyguards being pulled back. And there's no way James Earl Ray could arrange that by himself.
Well, certainly, you know, and those are important points to make. And the fact that these two things weren't widely known is a direct result of the systems that were in place in Memphis at the time. After the assassination, the local police and the FBI and the military, all which were there on the scene, the local police did no immediate investigation. They did not go house to house asking anybody what they saw because it was a black neighborhood. And so a lot of key evidence, including did anybody see anybody on the rooftop, what was going on there, all that remained a mystery. And none of it really came out. And it wasn't until many years later that many of the critical facts started coming out, including about even some things that neighborhood people wouldn't know about the removal of the security forces that were there and about soldiers being on top of the rooftop. These things started dribbling out. And then after 30 years, the government found it easy to say, well, nobody remembers exactly what happened, so we can't admit their evidence. You know, I mean, after 30 years, some of the details start to dissipate, and it's hard for people, you know, people contradict themselves, and so they were summarily dismissed as hustlers or confused or not remembering accurately. So it was a very effective cover-up, and the cover-up started immediately upon the assassination by the cops not investigating and by the FBI not investigating, and it's basically the cover-up that is the main proof of the conspiracy.
Also, what is amazing is in 1999, it's not that long ago, the mass media wouldn't touch the trial. This is the assassination of Martin Luther King, and they were found guilty. And yet, all the three-letter networks just ignored it, even in 1999.
Not only did they ignore it, but they parroted the government line, the things that I'm saying, that all these people who 30 years later were trying to get at the truth, and many of them were blacks, were simply con artists and hustlers. Of course, the government agents and agencies who covered this thing up weren't called con men for covering it up. And when they gave conflicting testimony about what happened up on that roof or about why the security details were pulled away, they weren't belittled and they weren't called, you know, names and characterized negatively. You know, in fact, nobody ever talked about it. But for example, there were people at the fire department, two black men who were members of the police department and the Memphis Police Department, and which of course is a very strange thing. And it takes a lot of understanding and thought to try to understand the position of a black man in the Memphis Police Department in 1968 and the kind of pressures that they were under. And what their objectives were personally and what they were trying to achieve by being in the midst of that kind of a situation. But these two black cops who were at the fire department were pulled away and you know, about a couple of like an hour before the assassination, and the person who wanted them removed was the chief investigator for a Senate committee that was chaired by a Southern senator named Eastland, who was a flaming racist. And he sent this guy down there. His name was Philip Manuel. And before he was an investigator for the Senate committee, he had worked for a military intelligence group for 25 years in the United States. And this military intelligence group, the 902nd, was the primary source of intelligence for the Pentagon on the civil rights movement and domestic terrorists. And this guy came down and, without any actual authority to do so, ordered the Memphis Police Department to remove these guys from the fire department. And so they did not see two other people from military intelligence go up to the top of the fire department roof that day. And they told the two military intelligence agents who went up to the top of the fire department roof. And this, the fire department building is on a hill. I've been to the scene and I've seen it.
It's most likely the backup shot.
Yeah, it's on a hill looking down at the Lorraine Motel. And it has a parapet that's 18 inches high all around it. And these guys are supposedly sitting up there with cameras, and they can hide. An expert on military surveillance named Christopher Pyle told me how they would set up a tripod in the middle of this roof, and so they wouldn't have to peek over the parapet. The camera from the middle of the roof would basically look over this parapet and right down at where King's room was in the Lorraine Motel, and nobody would ever see him unless you were above looking down. That's just for taking photographs. But of course, there's nobody in the fire department anymore to testify that the guys went up on the roof, and the person who was there, who let him up on the roof, the fire department chief, a guy named Carthel Whedon, was never questioned by the police that day. He was never questioned for 30 years. Nobody ever asked him about it. One of the first people to ask about him was me, you know, and he said, yeah, surprisingly, I let two guys up that day, and I never saw them come down. Mm-hmm. So all sorts of things that happened. And this is just two very important but minor details were never addressed.
Well, the younger audience may need to know that the FBI had a large file on Martin Luther King and had been tracking him and trying to discredit him and gathering blackmail on him for a long time. They had been after him prior to the assassination.
Yeah, and let me explain that in a little more detail. Racism, institutionalized racism, has systems at every level in the United States. It has systems in place at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal level. At the local level, the Memphis Police Department was working with the mafia, and the mafia was bringing in drugs into Memphis, and the mafioso who brought in the drugs were protected by the local Memphis Police Department, and they would, through distributors, would make sure that the blacks in Memphis got drugs. And now, once they were hooked on drugs, the Memphis Police Department had a hammer on them. These people would be afraid to testify in any trial against any political person, white political person in Memphis, so they could get away with it. The state is pretty much the same thing, it involves state officials who run the state police, the district attorney's office, all these very, all the parts of the judicial system that are rigged to prevent blacks from getting out of their rung on the bottom of society. And that at the top is J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, who are protecting the national security of the United States by labeling people like King as terrorists, and setting them up and actually framing them through a program called COINTELPRO.
Yes.
Counterintelligence program that the FBI set up to infiltrate the civil rights movement and destroy it from within with agent provocateurs and through fraud and break-ins and, when necessary, assassinations like that of Martin Luther King. And the thing that holds together all these systems, the system at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal level, is a common ideology of racism.
Mm-hmm.
People don't need you when your one racist goes into a room with another. They don't need to flash credentials. And if you're a mafioso and you're a racist, then you're in that room too, and you're part of the power structure that's enabling American national security.
Well, the old joke goes, if you look at any kind of white racist group, there are more FBI spooks than there are actual neo-Nazis.
Yeah, sure. I mean, well,
look at Oklahoma City bombing, for example.
The CIA is actually feeding the drugs to the mafia, to guys like Carlos Marcello, and it's the relationship between the federal government and the mafia kingpins that is responsible for the assassination of Martin Luther King.
And Carlos was pals with Charles Stein. And then there's Frank Liberta, who was in the Jowers Grill, which is how the case came about. They had to do a civil trial against Lloyd Jowers, making phone calls and essentially admitting it in front of everyone. And even if you're going to question what people remembered or not, why in the world would they even know who Frank Liberto is? How would they know he's in the mob? I mean, they couldn't have made that up. They don't know that stuff. You know, they're not the people in the diner anyway, or the grill.
Well, the thing about crime, organized crime, is that at the local level, everybody knows. And yet, at the local level, in 1968 in Memphis, people wanted prostitutes. They wanted to gamble. They wanted all the services that the mafia provided. They wanted pornography. And so at the local level, the mafia drugs are which enable the Memphis PD to control the black community. So the mafia is serving the essential security function, and so it is allowed to operate, and local law enforcement works hand in hand with them, and so everybody in town knows what's going on, and nobody says anything about it, just the way everybody knows that it's a racist, oppressive system, and nobody does anything to correct that either. It's the same exact thing.
Well, even higher than the local level, I mean, the FBI itself was working with Traficante and Carlos Marcello and these kingpins of Louisiana and Tampa, hiring them for their group of anti-Cuban factions that were supposed to take out Castro, and many people believe were involved in the Kennedy assassination. But the fact is, the FBI was working with the mafia, Sam Giaconta too, out of Chicago, hiring them out the same way that the Contras were hired out during Iran-Contra. They always have a middleman, or in modern day, the Al-Nusra Front or Al-Qaeda or the Mujahideen, who are openly financed and trained through
the
NATO
same
in the
system,
U.S.
The same exact system is in place today. Again, it's just in 45 years, we have advanced technology. Our language, the language has become more sophisticated, and the methods of covering it up have become more sophisticated, but it is the exact same system that's in place, and it has always been. And it always will be in America, because that's what America is. It's this corrupt, institutionalized racism in which the government relies on organized crime, which is ineradicable. You can't get rid of it. So they organize it and use it for what they consider purposes of national security, which is just a code name for a racist system that provides tremendous benefits for the top 1% at the expense of the 99% that are slapping around at the bottom.
Well, it's a layer of plausible deniability, because you can always, the mob always even has a layer. It gets some dupe to be a hitman and some backup. And so If they're caught, so what? They go to jail. They're a mafia criminal. It doesn't get back to the CIA or the people on the top. They can always act incompetent or have some excuse. But you see time after time again, the FBI working with crooks in entrapment cases, and the CIA and FBI being busted working internationally, actually, with terrorist groups, including the Cosa Nostra in the U.S.
Sure, and to think that Trafficante, Santo Trafficante, whose name translates into the patron saint of traffickers, Santo Trafficante, and Carlos Marcello, to think that these guys are not terrorists is a mistake and a false assumption. The mafia kingpins, like Trafficante and Carlos Marcello, were performing for the government as terrorists in the United States. And when they, in order to perform all their illicit activities in the United States, upon which the government relies to keep society imbalanced, these guys were given immunity. And neither Carlos Marcello nor Trafficante were ever investigated or arrested for their huge criminal enterprises, despite the fact that everybody in the world knew what they were doing.
And Trafficante was in Cuba, but they got him out, but not in the U.S. And then, I mean, look at Lucky Luciano was still dealing heroin from Sicily. Still able to do that. Or yeah. Merlansky and his gang openly murdering everybody and never went to jail. I mean, everyone knew.
My research over the last 30 years has pretty much established that it's this agreement between the federal government, the CIA, and the FBI, and the military to bring drugs into the United States that really is the cornerstone, the foundation stone of the system that keeps racial discrimination and oppression in place in the United States. And
a for-profit prison system.
At any time, but it serves the purposes of the white 1% that rules the country to have this happening. So it's allowed to happen. And in fact, the CIA manages it so that it happens.
$65 billion a year from the heroin or opium from Afghanistan. And it pumps all into the streets in Europe. It's really international, not just the U.S. But you see that over and over again. The CIA is the biggest drug cartel on Earth. And I think people are aware of that. Oh, yeah. I mean, they over-focus on characters like Free Ray Ricky Ross because there's videos about it. But all these people were naming and talking about Trump him 100 times over as far as bringing in crack and heroin and everything else. And yep. It makes a for-profit prison system.
Well, one of the things, getting back to King, that's important to understand within the context of what we're talking about is that there was plenty of evidence that James Earl Ryan was in New Orleans talking with, he had broken out of jail a couple of weeks or months before, and he makes his way to New Orleans where he meets with representatives of the Carlos Marcello organization. And he gets instructions at that time to kill Martin Luther King. In exchange for killing King, the mafia is going to give him a little bit of money and get him out of the country. Now, when James Earl Ray is tried, no aspect of this conspiracy is unravelled. Instead, he's labeled, and again, this is the fingerprints of the CIA and the FBI, you know, a lone assassin, some guy who just, because of some urge, tracks Martin Luther King around the country for a couple of months, and then for some reason is there at the right moment in this rooming house overlooking the Lorraine Motel so that when King steps outside, you can shoot him. Instead of part of a criminal conspiracy that's been organized by white racists and Carlos Marcello, who is also a flaming racist, and like Trafficante had made you know, really horrific statements about black people. And yet the government, despite King being killed and having millions of dollars to spend on any investigation, is not able to establish any of these contacts. And yet in the past 30 years, 40 years, it's been very clearly established that this is what happened, that Hoover, the racist, worked with Carlos Marcello, the racist, through their underlings to kill Martin Luther King.
Well, it's the same with Jack Rubenstein, same connections to the same people.
Yeah, and
he openly shot Oswald in front of everybody.
Yeah,
you have his phone records and everything. And
these were the go-to guys, Trafficante and Marcello, and they did very well for themselves by providing these functions.
That's the system. Now, there was allegedly a deathbed confession from Charles J. Stein saying that he was actually a shooter, and he did know James Earl Ray, and he also knew Carlos. But I'm not sure what to make of it, because it gets so murky. There's a lot of disinformation out there too. I didn't know if you'd heard of that, or what your two cents was on the confession from Charles Stein.
Well, you know, I have no, this is the first I'm hearing of it. So,
all right, then.
You know, I really think.
Was 2003.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a, Charlie Harrelson said he shot John Kennedy too. You know, so people can say anything, and in the absence of any, evidence, you can only be dubious. I mean, there has to be evidence. There has to be some things have to fit, and I don't know whether it fits or it doesn't fit, but I think there's certainly enough evidence. There's an overwhelming amount of evidence for everybody to understand perfectly well what happened that day in Memphis. You know, the government killed Martin Luther King and covered it up, and they got schleppers in the mafia and racists to do it for him, but they wanted him dead, and now he's dead.
And the hitman's not that important, because it's just some schmuck. So you know his name. So, I mean, the powers that be are the ones in charge.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
I said, even if you know the shooter's name, it's just some expendable lowlife. They're not.
Yeah,
it's not that important. What's important is that the government set it up and killed him. And then Bobby, too.
One of the things that the government is very clever at doing is focusing on irrelevant things like that rather than investigating the overall problems. You know, and in 1968, things were happening very fast. You know, there was a big event. There were major events every couple of weeks, every couple of months. I mean, as big an event as MLK was, it was only 5 years earlier that Kennedy was killed, and then it's only a few months later that Bobby Kennedy is killed. I mean, those were wild times, and it was like a 9/11 every month. You know, there was something really strange happening, and it was hard to keep up with all of it, but people knew generally then exactly what was going on. But it's important to remember that the government is in control, and the 1% is in control, and it's very hard to fight those forces. And in those days, they were killing people left and right.
Oh, yeah, they killed a lot of people, cops and witnesses and things involved in the Kennedy assassination. A lot of people were disappeared.
And kids were going off, young men, white boys. We're getting 200 of them are getting killed every week in Vietnam. So people, the context of how what things were going on then was different than it is now. And it's much, much less chaotic nowadays. And the government is much better at controlling information and controlling society today than it was then. There was, you know, open rebellion in those days. And there were gangs called the Black Panthers. And in Memphis, there were the Invaders. And in Chicago, there were the Blackstone Rangers. And blacks, unlike,
all of which had COINTELPRO.
You know, black guys were walking around with automatic weapons and shotguns and military formations and saying, we're not going to take this anymore. And the government was really coming down on these guys. And in Chicago, the Blackstone Rangers knew exactly what was going on in terms, again, of what I'm telling you about in terms of the systems that are in place. And they started going after, as soon as the Blackstone Rangers started going after the mafia drug dealers in Chicago, all of a sudden the government just started killing them all. Because they couldn't, no matter how desperate things get, the government cannot allow it to be known that it's in bed with the mafia and with major drug dealers. And anybody who starts exposing that particular relationship has signed their own death warrant. Glenn Greenwald can dribble out little factoids about the NSA, but he's not getting anywhere near what the problems are in America or what the underlying issues are. He's just skimming the surface like a spider on top of a water spider on top of a pond. And all the stuff that he's releasing means nothing. It's actually irrelevant. And it just serves to distract people from these underlying issues that I'm trying to use the King assassination to get at, because
well, his
King
boss was financing rebels in Ukraine.
Underlying things. Yes.
Pierre Omidyar was financing Nazis in Ukraine, Greenwald's boss. I wonder how he felt about that.
Yeah, and it just came out that he's one of his top executives in India, where Omidyar's empire is basically based in Mumbai, I believe. One of his schleppers over there, some guy, big shot, quit the Omidyar network or whatever it's called, and went about getting himself and this guy fascist in India elected president. And that was just broken in the news yesterday. And Omidyar is not overthrowing governments in the Ukraine; he's installing governments in India now. And if this isn't a symbol, an example of America's domination of the world, nothing is. And it's not just America's domination of the world and restructuring of political order around the world. It's an example of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, which Glenn Greenwald works for, as doing this reorganizing in a very violent and corrupt fashion. But you'll never see any news about this on The Intercept.
No, the top plutocrats are either hidden or are championing themselves as good guys.
Yeah. You know, and that's what they're really good at, because they control the media. One of the, mm-hmm. you know, Omidyar's in bed with BBC and the Morgan empire, and these people basically control media around the world and thus what people think and how people thinks about things, and Greenwald's shilling for them.
To be fair, Greenwald was always like that. Like, that's how he was before he was hired, too. He's always been a just kind of regular liberal that just takes little tiny pecks at things that can't change without getting to the root of it at all. But do well on Democracy Now.
Well, one of the things that's important in looking at the King assassination is the relative unsophistication of the media at that particular time in 1968. There were still a lot of independent news networks around that could, to some extent, contradict what the mainstream was saying. Since 1968, we've seen the consolidation of all the media networks. And now this is largely through legislation that's passed by Congress that allows oligarchs like Omidyar to centralize and control media, which means the propaganda that's coming at us is more uniform than it's ever been before. And so it's harder than ever for average Americans to to find alternative sources of information about what's happening. And therefore, the propaganda is more successful than it was even in those days.
Yeah, you've got your corporate media on one end, and you've got your completely bizarre, sensationalist, I'll just say it, bullshit media on the so-called alternative media. And it's very hard to find, well, people like yourself who have a sound and rational narrative to tell, who don't get into weird stuff like space aliens or whatever and discredit themselves. And I'm not sure if that's on purpose or if there really are that many idiots or a bit of both. But we desperately need independent media, which is what I'm trying to do. It's a very uphill battle.
But it is. Yeah. Well, it's commendable that you're spending the time, but you should also realize you're part of a long tradition, man. You know, I mean, I remember there was a magazine called The Guardian back in the 60s. And if you wanted to know about what was going on in the Vietnam War, you had to read The Guardian because the New York Times wasn't telling you. You know, there was no... They were taking reports that came out of North Vietnam and China and Russia about the war and from North Vietnam and telling people. But of course, it had a circulation of like 10,000, you know, but there were small media outlets in those days and people were committed to trying to do it. But just like blacks in Memphis are worn down by a system, and just like I suppose to some extent, and Obama represents this, at some point willing to even betray their own movements because somebody's going to give them personally a way out, they do take it, and they do betray the movement, and they do stop fighting because it's so oppressive and so overwhelming. They think that it's never going to change, and, well, I just might as well get my piece of the action and take care of myself and my own, and I'm sure that's what Greenwald's thinking too. You know, I mean, obviously that's what Obama's thinking. And a lot of people start thinking that because it's just so oppressive.
That's a lot of Latin American leaders can take the bribe or get replaced by their cousin. You know, they look at their choices and they sell out for personal gain because they feel like fighting the fight, they're just going to end up dead anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of allure to being part of the in crowd. And when the powers that be come to you and say, "Come over to the dark side," it's very hard to resist for a lot of people. And you know, human nature being what it is. But no, you're doing a great job, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about some of these things.
Well, I thank you for your time, and really, that's just a bit on the assassination. There are more angles that I'll be exploring with other guests this week, probably. It's so huge, but it is important to try to tell the truth in history, and that's the first step. And I think we are moving in a good direction with the web. I know the corporate media is more uniform than it's ever been. You could see that with the selling of the Iraq War and so on. But I think a lot of people, for different reasons, because they're financially strained or whatever, are just mistrusting the government again. And I'll just take that as a win.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Adios.
Take care. Adios.